Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I'm your host, Lotta Dan, the Community Manager and Content Creator here at Living Sober. And today I am so delighted to be joined by Nina K. Tane Tinaro. Nina is a nana, she's a music manager, a mentor, speaker, yoga instructor, and activist working in sexual violence prevention and treatment. Welcome, Nina.
Oh, kia ora, Lotta. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Oh, no. The pleasure is all mine, really. honestly, it's my favourite thing to talk to people who are sober because they get it.
We're a breed.
We're a special breed. Yep. All right. So for people who don't know you, I suppose let's start at the beginning. Well, first of all, how long since you had a drink of alcohol?
I say I'm 21 years sober, which is true. However, if we talk about when I had a drink, I did have, when I did kapa haka, before we went on the stage at the national, at the regional competition, we had all had a little shot of port. So that happened. And I did have a little relapse. Probably about 10 years ago, I had like a couple of vodka cruises or something. But I don't consider those as impacting on my journey. So I say I'm 21 years sober.
Awesome. I love that. And, you know, that's something that comes up quite a lot in our community where people have a little lapse or accidentally pick up what they thought was tonic and it was vodka tonic in a bar. And they say, does that mean I've lost my count? And we always say, you do what works for you. This is personal, whatever keeps you moving forward, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly it. Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your drinking story. When did you start and how did it go for you, your relationship with alcohol?
Sure. So it was probably when I was about 13, 14, I first started drinking. Well, I'd tasted it before then because Dad would often pour us a shandy when you're watching the rugby. We'd have a wee taste. But actually drinking alcohol and getting drunk was, yeah, when I was about 13, 14. And it was in Christchurch Cathedral Square and with a bunch of street kids. And, yeah, that started my whole journey with alcohol, my relationship with alcohol, yeah.
And what was your, I mean, I know for me, this minute I touched it, I just loved the stuff. What was your kind of pull towards it? Was it a slow burn or just a yes?
It was a yes, you know, but I ended up being taken home, driven, getting a ride with the police home that night to mum's place. And the next morning I woke up and thought, I loved that. I want to do that again. You know, so I was still at college, so I didn't go crazy with it, and I didn't really have much money either. You know, I was just a kid, but I would often break off school and go into the park across the road with others and drink, you know, and it kind of started to have an impact on my education. I ended up leaving school. With the start of sixth form, I don't know what you call that these days, but and then that's when I just dove into it. From there, I had a boyfriend who was right into it, and so we basically just as much as we could, we were drinking. Yeah.
And at the time, were you feeling like this was just a fun thing? I'm being a bit naughty and rebellious, or were you aware that you were using it to kind of help with the emotional stuff that is often going on for me? And again, I don't want to always relate it back to me, but for me, I thought I was a fun time girl who loved partying, but actually I now realize that I was trying to cover up just an immense sadness. So yeah. What was your feeling at the time? And now looking back, how do you reflect on what was going on with that enthusiasm for the booze?
I think in the very beginning, because I've been through phases, my relationship with alcohol went through phases, but in the beginning, it was fun, you know, when I was in that kind of school era, then when I got into a relationship, which was my first serious relationship, it was a lot wilder and crazier, and it wasn't so much fun. It was more like, it was crazy, you know, and there was lots of crazy things going on because we were in a punk scene. There was all sorts of other spin-offs happening, drugs and, you know, suicide attempts, and, you know, our friends were just up to all sorts of things. And it was, we were in the music industry, yeah, and it was really in the art scene as well. And it was really wild and crazy. And I don't think there was a part of me that knew, because alongside of that there was, you know, domestic violence and stuff, and it wasn't a good place. I knew it wasn't, but so I think it was more the was more like being on a roller coaster, and definitely a high aspect of escapism going on, you know, and connection for me and my boyfriend, because that's how we would connect as well, was through just drinking. But then it would get really bad at the end, you know, and stink things would happen, but we'd just go back to drinking again. Yeah. And being with friends, and we're all doing it, and so therefore it's a connection thing. But I was definitely aware that it was messed up, what the level that we were doing it. And then there was the next phase would be after him, and him and I broke up. And then when I ended up in the sex industry, and you know, alcohol became part of that whole of my work, because, you know, there was a bar and you could have 3 free drinks per shift. So it kind of took on this whole other thing. And then, you know, we were encouraged to let customers buy us drinks. And so it was, you know, it was this whole other, it was more of a transactional thing. But I also used it, because after each shift, I would go out straight away. You know, I mean, I was already prettied up from having to look nice for my shift. I'm like, well, I might as well go out, you know, go out on the town and just drink and end up in, you know, all sorts of parties and underground clubs and dodgy venues, and any venue that was still open till sunrise, you would find me at. And so that was more, I mean, that was another kind of wild, but it was just me, you know, there wasn't a boyfriend there. And it was very much escapism, because it was also me not coping with my reality, the fact that I was a peep show dancer and a stripper. And really there was a part of me that actually wasn't okay with that, you know.
Gosh, okay, there's a lot going on there. But thank you for sharing so honestly, because, you know, our stories are our stories. And, you know, I can see you sitting there now, and you're so sort of strong and grounded. And I think back to that woman, that young woman who was just in this world of madness and trying to figure yourself out and trying to cope with things and doing the best you can, and also living in a world where alcohol's everywhere. I mean, it was a part of your job, you know, so makes sense, I suppose, that you got so pulled into it. Did you have in those days any sort of internal dialogue going on about the drinking, and also maybe a disconnect from your true self? I mean, I know that's a massive question.
Yeah, I'm all about it.
You know, how sort of aware were you of, yeah, what sort of, if you can think back, what sort of inner dialogue and this, you know, were you having with yourself?
Do you mean, which phase do you mean, like just in general?
I suppose, or? I'm thinking after you broke up with that boyfriend and you were working in the sex industry and you were glamorous and successful, but drinking and partying kind of wild and disconnected, I suppose. But did you have a part of you that was inside feeling like, this isn't me, this isn't right? I don't know.
Oh, 100%, Lotta. And as I, you know, I've reflected on it a lot over the last couple of decades, and it comes up all the time, actually. And I love doing that, you know. I love to reflect on it, because I reflect on how, you know, often I'd wake up and I just had no idea where I was, no idea who I was with, no idea where I'd been, what I'd been doing, just total blackouts, you know. And in those moments, no, despite that might still be a little bit drunk or, you know, incredibly hungover, but there was always this little voice that went, holy crap, you know, what this is not what I this is I know that there's something better for me, but for now, this is it. I'm in it, I'm stuck in it, and I don't know how to get out. And so I'm just going to go back to the bottle store, you know, because I don't know what else to do. I can't see beyond this picture right now, but I do know that there is something else out there for me.
Okay.
And yeah, I've just got to work out eventually how am I going to get there, you know. But and it was also the fact that I wasn't connected to my whānau during that time, like I would avoid them. You know, you don't want to go and sit down and have a cup of tea with mum, knowing that this is, you know, that you've come from this reality and mum's going to ask questions. So I'll just avoid mum, you know. So that was a disconnect as well. And that for me was like a sign that I knew that things aren't okay, because otherwise I'd be able to face mum. Simple. Yeah. So there's definitely a huge part of me that knew and kept sort of saying to myself, hey, this isn't, you know, this you can't sustain this. And what are you going to do? How are you going to get out of this? Yeah.
Okay, so and by the way, I love that little inner voice because that's like the little wise part of you that was still in the midst of that noise
Yes.
and chaos was there. So, you know, how did you get to a point where you were able to change?
Well, it's funny because I call it, refer to it like a calling, because basically it got so bad. You know, I was adding drugs on top of it, and I was finding myself, you know, like in the boss's car, the strip club owner's car, going places that I didn't want to go, and him trying to do things to me that I didn't want him to do. So it was starting to get into a zone where I was like, this is getting a bit dangerous. And all of a sudden, I kind of got like this calling to go and visit my grandfather, who I'd never really known. But this is my father's father, who, because we're from down the Waitomo Caves, and so he lived down there. And there was just, we didn't grow up around our whānau, you know, but there was something in me that urged me to go and visit him. And that was actually a really big deal, because of the fact that I knew that I was a complete mess, because of the fact that I didn't really know my whānau, because of the fact that I was so committed to my job, I'd turn up every night, and I was so committed to my relationship with alcohol and drugs. And, you know, so for me to kind of go see that, hear that calling, envisage it, and go, so that it was so strong that I wanted to pursue it, was actually pretty amazing. You know, like it snapped me out of this rut that I was in. And before you knew it, I was on a bus. I can't remember if I hitchhiked on it or whether I actually organized it. I have no idea. But I remember it left from Fort Street. Sorry, I remember there were the buses that left from Fort Street, and somehow I ended up on one of them. I feel like I hitchhiked, but I must have, because they were called the Kiwi Experience. They were like a backpacking bus. And somehow I ended up on one, and I ended up down in Waitomo. And I spent 2 nights, I think it was, down there with granddad and some cousins that I'd never met. And it was just a couple of little conversations that him and I had, and those transformed me. He basically told me that I had this ancestral name, which I didn't even know I had, and the name was Hine Rangi. And that was, so that was an ancestor from Te Aroha. And he told me the story of her, her trials, her tribulations, her journey from before she was even born. She had this destined journey that was mapped out for her. And so when she was born, she kind of grew up knowing that that was her pathway and that she would have, she had to pursue it when she was of age, when the time was right. So she pursued that pathway. And the, essentially, it's a story about deep love, love for your people, love for the well-being of your people and the relationship that your people have with others. So it was a very profound story that he told me, and it was enough to make me go, I think I'm her. I think I'm actually her. Yeah, and I went back to Auckland after that, and I quit my job, and I quit drinking, I quit smoking cigarettes, I quit drugs. It happened just like that. So I call that the beginning of my recovery journey, because I did relapse in the few years after that. I kept going back to alcohol. I didn't go back to drugs, but alcohol was always my number one lover, you know. So I would keep returning to alcohol. But that was the catalyst that put me onto this pathway that I've been on for the almost 22 years now of recovery and sobriety. Yeah.
And what you're talking about there is culture and reconnecting in with your culture. And you're a Māori and wahine, you live in New Zealand, which is Eurocentric, right? We have, the country's based on European models. There's a lot of Pākehā like me around. You know, a lot of our members at Living Sober are from overseas, so they won't know this sort of story, but you are one of our Indigenous peoples, and you're saying that you were feeling disconnected and having a conversation with your grandfather and realizing and sort of embracing and connecting in with that cult, you know, who you are, was so healing. And I just wonder how important that is for people to do, to be able to reconnect in with their culture and who they are, where they come from, what grounds them and roots them in the world.
I think it's incredibly important, because it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, you have a history. And the more I learn about recovery and trauma, the trauma that we experience through our lives, the more I start to see how there are so many unseen layers that not even we are aware of. We're born with, you know, we call it intergenerational trauma, right? So if you were to trace back through your whakapapa or your genealogy line, your history, and look at the relationship that your ancestors have had with alcohol, you would probably see a pretty intriguing, amazing, compelling kind of pathway that it took. Because we, like I said, we're born with this stuff. And I mean, I honestly just think that there's a lot in that, definitely. And then typically, because of how strong alcohol is, you know, even the fact we have words like spirits, you know, it's like, okay, why do we call it spirits? You know, and you can kind of research that a bit. It's quite interesting. But the effect that it, impact that it has upon our ability to be connected, to be truly authentically connected to things like environment, to things like family, we all know that it can sever. It can actually sever those connections. So essentially, the journey of recovery for me is about restoring the connections to family, to community, to environment, but more than anything, to myself, you know, to my, the little girl within, you know, and whatever I grew up with, having a, I study at times, I study, when I say study, in my mind, the role that alcohol played when I was a child, for example, you know, in my environment, the role that it played when I was a teenager, before I even had a drink. So all of it is relevant. And our relationship with alcohol is not, there's a whole story behind it, again, that we may not even be aware of. And because of that, I believe that our spirit has the potential to guide us over and above alcohol, over and above that. Like, our spirit is our mind is not present typically when we've been drinking. Our ability to be present and be centered and grounded and clear and understand what's going on is not happening. But the spirit kicks in. The spirit always knows, our spirit always knows what's going on. And so I think that when I got that calling, it was actually a really good reminder to me that my spirit protects me. My spirit is communicating with me. There is a relationship there with my spirit that I need to develop, because my spirit took care of me. So, and that's what I've done ever since. And so, yeah, every day I'm having conversations with my spirit. And when I say my spirit, for people, it's different things. Some would say it's a relationship with God or a relationship with ancestors, or, you know, depending on what your faith is and your belief is. But yeah.
I mean, yeah, gosh, I mean, I just wish I could do a 4-hour chat with you. So much here. But I 100% agree with you about alcohol disconnecting. It seems crazy when you see that and you know it and you understand it from the inside out, right? We've felt that reconnection that happens when we quit drinking. It's crazy when you are so aware of that and then you look at this world we live in.
Yeah.
It's just treated like this casual, fun, normal, everyday thing. And particularly Te Ao Māori lens, do you see the sort of impact that's having with your whānau and community and wider, you know, part of society where it's embedded, it's treated like fun and normal, and it is just doing so much harm?
Yeah, I see it every day, Lotta, you know, every single day. Like, I can't help but see it. And I mean, also working in the music industry, it's everywhere, and that's starting to change, thankfully. But definitely in Te Ao Māori, I mean, when you study the history of the arrival of alcohol to Aotearoa or New Zealand, it's very revealing. It shows very clearly the resistance. There was an incredible widespread resistance from leaders throughout the entire country, from different tribes who observed the behaviour of the settlers under the influence of alcohol, who could see what it was doing to them, and said, "Oh no, we're definitely not. We do not want that. That's a disease, you know. And if that is to even touch or influence our people, we're going to lose everything that we hold to be precious and important." And so there was huge resistance. Like, they went to some really incredible lengths, some of our chiefs and leaders, both male and female. And, you know, where they had penalties even for people who were found with alcohol. And it was incredible. And then you've got a whole movement that began to try and help police the consumption of alcohol at Māori events. And that whole movement, that was, they're called the Māori Wardens. So the Māori Wardens were a group of people who would, they still exist today, the Māori Wardens, who would be prevalent at different Māori events and try to kind of help keep a handle on the damage of alcohol. And then what ended up happening was, you know, it just got in. It didn't matter that there were actual what we call rāhui or bans on tribal areas. that it wasn't allowed within the area. Of course, it eventually snuck in, and our people took a real liking to it. And before you know it, we've got a bit of chaos happening. And so I think it's really interesting, and I always encourage Māori people, but also others, to have a look at that. Because I think when you look at that, rather than looking at it like, oh, that's not my story because I'm not Māori, you look at it like, this is my story because I have a relationship with alcohol, and this story is showing me what can happen when you have a community that exists, or a society that exists with no alcohol, and how healthy that is, and then you throw alcohol in it. And see, it's very, I think it's really helpful, because you are the community that exists without, that one day existed without alcohol. You are that. You represent that. And then alcohol came along and it wreaked chaos and havoc upon you. So now it's just about going back. It's given me so much strength. I believe that me learning that right at the very, very beginning of my recovery journey has been one of the greatest drives behind why I am still sober today. Because I understand the history, and when you can see it in a bigger picture, then you kind of go a bit gentler on yourself, and you go, you know what I mean? Yeah, and then you kind of can give yourself the license to go, hey, I'm actually a victim of the societal issue. It's not, I'm supposed to do this. I'm supposed to suffer with alcohol, and you know, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to do that anymore, you know, because
we are the healing generation. And, you know, it's so embedded now, but I do believe that we are slowly, there's enough of a growing, niggling, agitating, advocating, starting to happen. We've got a long way to go. And as you and I both know, there was a call made recently in the last couple of weeks by Māori health leaders to the government to say we need to be looking at alcohol regulations through a Te Ao Māori lens, and we need changes for our people. And I'll put a link in when I publish this so people can have a look at that. But this is the type of thing that is starting to happen, and we all need to get behind it. We all need to get behind it because we all suffer. And we all, you know, we are unique individual cultures, but we live together and we cohabit, and we need to just be supporting everyone's individual journeys. And I mean, I just think you are such a gift. And just tell me before we wrap up, what sort of work are you doing now helping others? Because going public with your story, I've done it as well, you know, it's a thing. So when did you decide to do that, and how does it go for you now, you know, being open and then having people reach out and helping them?
Yeah, well, I think I went public about 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. I started coming out on social media. I already had a bit of a following because I was a yoga instructor and a Zumba instructor, and you know, I did a lot of health and lifestyle stuff. So, but then something actually occurred in my life. There was a kind of a bit of a public thing about me, and the information was incorrect. You know, it kind of alluded to me being a prostitute, which I wasn't. Not that I'm judging prostitutes at all, but it was not my truth. It alluded to me having been a junkie, which I wasn't. Once again, not judging that either, but it wasn't the truth. And so there was all this kind of twisted stuff about me. So I basically came out on social media and said, you know what? This is who I am. I've been a peep show dancer, I've been a stripper, these are the places I worked in these years, here's some photos of them, here's some photos of me doing my work, you know, like,
right. Owning your truth.
Yeah, I owned my truth. I just thought, I will not tolerate somebody else telling my story for me, because I have three children and a grandson, and they need to know the truth of who I am, and I'm not afraid of that, and I'm not ashamed of that. And then I shared about my journey, because most of my community had no idea that I was in recovery. I managed to kind of hide it because I felt, I mean, this is a Te Ao Māori thing once again, but I felt like the norm is to drink. And so when I was at events surrounded by Māori whānau, I would just drink something that looked like alcohol, or I would have a drink there and I wouldn't actually drink it. And so I kind of just hid my sobriety, which is crazy, but that's just what I, for my survival, I felt like it was the thing to do. So when I came out about it, that community kind of went, oh my gosh, yes, you are. That makes sense. You know, because at the end of the night, I'm still sober and I can still drive people. And they're like, oh, wow. But yeah, I didn't want people to feel, you know, like I thought I was better than them or anything like that.
It's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not about that. So anyways, I'm not sure if that really answers the question that you asked me. Sorry, Lotta, I think almost.
Well, I suppose you don't even need to answer it, because the bit of it which was about helping others, I think even just by being honest, taking ownership of your own narrative, talking as you do from a place of truth but also great knowledge, and, you know, is as I said, a real gift. And so I just want to thank you so much for coming on and doing this chat with me. And I would love to have you again or anything, you know, let's stay connected.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, well, thank you for having me and thank you for providing this platform. You know, it's just fantastic. We need it, and really appreciate what you're doing and appreciate the light that you're shining on this aspect of well-being. So thanks, Lotta.
Kia ora and nā mihi to you.
Nā mihi.
Cheers.
Take care.